All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Matinee Talk. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot, with me as always,
Julian Owens.
And joining us as a special guest,
Brett Leibsker. How y'all doing?
Cool. So today we're going to do a retro review on Jingle All the Way. We actually recorded a pod on this about a week ago, and unfortunately Logic Pro got stupid. But without further ado, Julian, Blu-ray releases.
So this is from last week, and I feel like we need to have a discussion. Not a discussion. We just have to briefly talk about these because
it's a lot of cool remasters.
Absolutely. So, I'm going to be broke this Christmas because I'm just going to give you the list of all these 4Ks and some of the Blu-rays. But from the 1st of December, here are the movies that have been 4K remastered. The original Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit Trilogy, Blade, Chernobyl, Leon the Professional, both Equalizer movies, even though that's the exact same thing. Then we're talking about Beverly Hills Cop. Then we're talking about Coming to America. And, like, there's so many other movies that I know I'm missing. But just off of Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, Blade, and for me, the Coming to America and Beverly Hills Cop, the quintessential Eddie Murphy films now being remastered in 4K, it's just like, what? What? I'm broke this Christmas. Like, don't ask me for anything. I will be broke. Like, I'm sorry. It is going to happen.
This might give me the opportunity. I never watched the Hobbit movies, mainly because of the awful way they were presented in theaters, and then certainly the reviews didn't help. But maybe now seeing these 4K remasters of the Hobbit, maybe this holiday season I'll go back and watch the Hobbit movies.
I'm really interested about Top Gun.
Oh, that's the other one I forgot. Sorry.
The sound quality on Top Gun. Like,
you got to feel those jets.
Yeah. And just watching the trailers for Maverick, I'm just like, I need some Top Gun.
I need a little bit of it in my life. And
you have the need? The need
for
speed.
Yes, I do. And also, really quick, just to highlight, because we're doing this on this week, so just to get you guys know, Mario Puzo's Godfather, like the death of Michael Corleone, is also going to be coming out on the 8th.
The unneeded redo.
I'm going to ask a question as soon as I finish, because I want to ask your opinion on it, but we'll get there in just a second. The Possessor and Uncut is going to be also released in 4K.
That is so good.
Okay.
I mentioned it when I did our review, but yes. When Paige and I saw that, oh my god, yeah, it's great.
Okay,
like you got to see it. You got to see the uncut version.
Okay, and then I got to hold that to you. And then the other two that I think are going to be interesting to see as 4K remasters will be Total Recall, and They Live.
Mm.
So those are going to be the other two movies that come out on the 8th. So, yeah. This is going to be completely interesting to see. Now, let me ask us guys who love The Godfather. So, an unpopular opinion. Just saying, I couldn't finish part 3. I still can't. I've tried to watch it 5 different times this pandemic, during this entire pandemic, and I still cannot finish it. I get to the hour and a half mark, and I'm like, this is hot shit. I can't watch it anymore. So, let me ask this. Do you think, in your personal opinion, I should give it another shot with this death of Michael Corleone cut?
So I was somebody up until about the beginning of the pandemic had not seen a single Godfather movie. One of those weird black holes in my film viewing experience. My brother-in-law saw a deal. It was like $20 for the trilogy on Apple. So he bought it for me. And then like with each viewing, I would just like make a pasta dish, get a cheap bottle of Coppola wine and watch them. I mean, 3 bad.
yeah. Yep. I mean, he's not wrong.
So I still can't will I watch this new cut? Yes, but it might take me like another 30 years.
Okay. Because I'm sitting here like, you know, I watched Godfather when I was 15, 16 when it came on AMC when they did the whole marathons on during Christmas and Thanksgiving. So I watched them all that way. And then I found out my dad has the original DVD cuts of all the movies that they put on DVD in like the 90s. But watched those on my Xbox and just flashed through them for the all one weekend except for 3. Because I was like, if everybody tells me 3 is bad, I can wait on it. So I tried it this year. Like I said, 5 different times. I just cannot grasp around 3. Just something about 3 that just makes it bad. And for one of the most, if not influential, but one of the best women directors of this time to be terrible at acting in this film alone.
Yes. Just was like, she is terrible.
But I want to give it another shot. So that's why I'm like, should I spend money on another Godfather trilogy, another Godfather film to see about the death of Corleone?
Okay. I mean, we don't have a lot of new movies to watch right now, so
And speaking of new movies, so the news recently that just dropped that HBO Max is going to be dropping 17 movies directly to their streaming platform, and they'll be available for how long?
30 days.
So yeah, a lot there to process because it's something new. If you want to listen to something a little more in-depth, the three of us actually did a podcast on Julian's King Julian podcast where we did a deep dive into talking about the streaming wars, what's the future of theaters. But just real quick while we're going through news, before we get into our main topic, which is the retro review of Jingle All the Way, thoughts, guys?
Just going off of that really quick, I think that at first, as I mentioned on the podcast, it will be coming out, side note, it will be coming out on Thursday. This episode will be coming out on the day before that, so the link that you'll see in the podcast won't be on there until then, so just letting you guys know about that. But overall, I was scared, and I was kind of like, this is the end of theaters, right? I thought this was going to be the end, but as we did a deep dive, as we started talking more about it, and my personal opinion that I'll give you guys here is it's not groundbreaking enough for it to make a dent into the movie business, but it's decent enough to be like, okay, Warner Brothers won't die in 2021 about these film theaters. AMC can cry about it what they want to. Regal, Cinemark can do the same, but like they got to find ways to make money as well as all the other theaters or studios are doing the same.
Yeah, I would echo that and just say, yeah, I think the death of the theater, I think, is a little overstated right now. I think it does tell me that kind of the film business in 2021 is still going to be weird, and it's still going to be this weird, you know, pandemic, post-pandemic kind of regrouping. But I do think we do get back to some normalness in 2022, unless AT&T's like, hey, we just got 1 billion subscribers by doing this. If that happens, if these numbers are great for AT&T, then it might be the death of theaters.
Yeah. In other news, so with it being the 35th anniversary of Rocky IV, Sylvester Stallone actually came out and said that he went to the ICU after Dolph Lundgren connected on a punch to his head. Like, what?
That's crazy, because I did just watch Rocky IV, like, no more than about 5 days ago.
Just great trash.
My roommate, I was like, oh, cool, we're about to watch the end boxing match in Rocky IV. And he's like, I think I've seen this, like, once. And I was like, whoa, man, this is, like, my favorite, like, boxing scene ever. That's surprising, because on video, it looks like they never touch each other.
Yeah,
there's a lot of quote unquote fake punches on there.
But I mean, it's believable in the sense that like you look at the two of them and you're like, oh yeah, Dolph Lundgren would totally whip Stallone's ass.
Yeah, they're not in the same weight class.
And to your point, speaking on that, and I think it mirrors what happens in Creed 2, because same concept. Michael B. Jordan was talking about. I keep forgetting the actor's name that played in Creed 2, who he was fighting against. He got one good hit in on Michael B. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan was like, oh.
Yeah.
He almost got that as well. So it's like both of you guys mirroring each other because of this.
You're just tiny. Like, it was one of my few complaints with Creed 2 was that, like, they did not appear to be in the same weight
class. They definitely weren't in the same weight class at all. And
it was the same with Rocky IV.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, all right, we're going to put featherweights with heavyweights. All right, this makes sense. Yeah. All right.
All right, next in news, we had last week the death of David Prowse, famous for portraying the physical embodiment of Darth Vader, bodybuilder, huge guy, and if you watch any of the old documentaries on Star Wars, also has a very feminine, petite voice, and it's very funny to hear him say the Darth Vader lines, and then you hear the James Earl Jones voice. But either way, rest in peace, David Prowse. Big, huge, imposing, powerful guy, you know.
Yes. And
the gait of Darth Vader was always interesting to me. Like, I never read anything in terms of kind of what his, like, goals were in terms of how he was portraying it, but it was always an interesting gait that, like, it didn't feel natural to me, and it not being natural kind of added to the horror of the icon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would agree. And that's why, like, how I feel about, I keep forgetting the actor's name who played Chewbacca. May he also rest in peace, because he passed away.
Peter Mayhew.
Yeah, Peter Mayhew. He passed away last year, actually. Mm-hmm. So both of these guys kind of gave us the actual physical presence of really great iconic characters in Star Wars. And, you know, Prowse being this embodiment of Darth Vader and showing, like, the overpowering prowess that he could be was amazing in itself. So I won't sit here and be like, oh, James, there wouldn't be a Darth Vader without James Earl Jones. I think Prowse played a lot of roles in that without his voice, but yes, may he rest in peace, and he also will be just like Mayor, also in the echelon of icons that were contributing factors to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. With that being said, we're going to take a short break to go to a commercial for our sponsor, and we will be right back to talk about the holiday classic Jingle All the Way.
Yes.
All right, we'll be right back. And we're back. So today we're talking retro review, Jingle All the Way. So I'm gonna get right to the bat. My initial thoughts: how big of a creep is Phil Hartman in this movie?
So, can I just say something really quick before we get there? Right, Phil is just fun in this film, right? He's fun, but he's creepy fun, right? And
he's
as a kid,
dad.
Right?
He's a good dad.
But can we? That's enough. Can we argue about that? Really
he's
quick?
A little passive aggressive. But he got his kid the Turbo Man doll.
Okay, just because
did his homework.
Wait, hold on, yes. hold on, really quick before we get there. Just because you give your kid a Turbo Man doll does not mean you're a great dad. How passive aggressive he was.
Got the reindeer. I mean, like I said, he's a little passive aggressive about it, and he's like, oh yeah, well, I got the Turbo Man doll like two months ago. It's yeah,
it was Johnny's favorite. It's gonna be Johnny's favorite. Like
nothing is too much for the love of a child.
And like, I hate to say this, sorry, but like Phil Hartman, I just gonna put it out there. He's your typical, like, oh, you're a dad. Yeah. Like, you know, there's also like, oh, you're like a hot dad or you're a cute dad. He's just one of those like, oh, you're a dad.
It's really okay. Being
bad. It's like when Arnold shows up and he's on the roof. He's like, oh, yeah, I just had these extra lights laying around in the garage. So I was like, oh, what the heck?
I'll just put them up, you know? And it's just like, Phil, like, stop. Like, I get you, but another thing is he's a dad, and it just like mind boggles me that he's a ladies' man in this film.
Yeah, all of the single moms
love the hell out of him.
Love him. Like, oh, thank you for fixing my door. Thank you for doing all. Yeah.
With someone like Phil Hartman, too, like, I wonder how much of this was like, on the page and how much he brought to
it. Yeah, because rest in peace, comedic brilliance.
Absolutely.
This guy, Phil Hartman.
Phil being Ted was actually really great. And I was going to say that also, Brett. I feel like him and Sinbad, they had lines, is the word I'd use.
On the page.
Right, right. They had lines, right? They were like, okay, we just need you to give me some kind of story getting to this point, but whatever you do, run with it, right? And I feel like that's what Phil and Sinbad did in this film. And again, we could talk about Ted a little bit more if you want, but Ted literally just is himself. It's like the epitome of Phil Hartman, and it's just funny as hell to see him. Like, for instance, when he talks about bringing the reindeer, I forgot the reindeer's name that quickly. And he's like, and, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Howard. Howard is asking Ted, what are you doing with the reindeer? And he's like, what are you going to do with the reindeer after you go? Oh, I'm gonna take it to
Minnetonka
and let it be with the other reindeer that I have and let it be with its kind and be one with nature. It's like, shut the hell up, Ted. Like, shut up. Like, I get you.
Why do you have to belittle me? Because I work hard.
I just asked the question, Ted. Damn. But yes, like, stuff like that. It's
and then, like, him picking up the phone and just being like, oh, you're not ever around. I'm helping your wife with her cookies.
Oh, my favorite.
She's
my favorite.
Up in the shower. You want me to go get her?
When you guys were kids, did you know what the cookies were?
Exactly. There's so many adult references.
No.
And then the way he's like, oh, yeah, she's up in the shower.
Do you want me to go grab her? Oh, these cookies are amazing. I'm sorry, Howard. I gotta go.
Like, certainly, like, as a kid, you just, you know,
he really likes the cookies.
But, so, like, going back then and, like, watching it, you know, then when you're, like, a teen, and, again, this is just a movie that's always on cable, so you're just always watching because it's just always fun, rewatchable. It's like, oh, like, he's a creep. And, like, there's a lot of, like, fun adult humor in this movie.
Yeah.
What's crazy, and I was going to say what's crazy is, speaking on today, the point, this film came out in 96. And I know this was one of the very first VHS movies that my brothers and I watched. Because, again, showing my age, I was born in 94. So in 97, 98, this was a movie that we kept putting on for Christmas because it was a movie that we loved. And, again, like we kind of said in the podcast that hasn't been ever, that's in the midst of the clouds that be. I was 3-4 years old watching this and not realizing what I was watching. But at the same time, it was so cool watching this version of Arnold Schwarzenegger. We'll get to him in a bit, but like
this action superhero,
right? But I've seen as a late '90s kid, I watched the child friendly Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's who you grew up with,
right? I didn't grow up with the gritty Will Smith like everybody else did. I grew up with the family friendly / getting to be grit Will Smith. I got to see the family-friendly Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I never got to see the gritty Terminator, Terminator 2, all of that Arnold Schwarzenegger until late in my, like, adolescence. But it was so interesting to see Arnold and being like, every year, my brothers, without fail, we put this on and be like, Turbo Man! And always wanted the little doll, but we couldn't get it because, you know, fake. But, yeah, it was pretty interesting to see it from that.
Speaking of which, great quote. Put the cookie down!
No!
But yeah, and what's crazy is I had already been exposed to the Terminator franchise when I saw this, and then, you know, seeing like Kindergarten Cop and
Twins. So I mean, we were, Johnny and myself, what, 12, 13?
Yeah.
Kind of when this was kind of peaking, and yeah, so kind of for us it was... Oh, okay.
This is kind of interesting.
Arnold's starting to turn the corner.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing is, too, is he's turning the corner, but then you're also like, wow, you're not a great dad.
And to be honest, and I was going to say this is one thing. Okay, I guess we're going to hit on Howard now. Arnold Schwarzenegger's character. Howard is a terrible dad. Like, if Phil Hartman is bad just because he's passive aggressive and does everything for his child, Arnold Howard is so terrible because he's just a forgetful idiot, right? And like we start to film off as him being this salesman for mattresses, I guess is the word I'd use, right? And he's sitting there just like, you're my number one customer.
You're my number one customer.
And he's leaving his kid's karate class. I mean, going to his kid's karate class late after, like, just basically being like, oh, yeah, I got to go sell something. And his secretary's like, hey, I'm giving you all the cue cards of why you got to be there. I know you're about to tell me the exact same thing. So here's the card for telling you, shut up and go take your son to karate class. And wouldn't do that. And you tell me, again, this is just my personal opinion. You mean to tell me that you waited that day before Christmas on Christmas Eve.
You didn't get your kid a gift.
Anything. Like
nothing.
Anything. Like a Turbo Man. Okay, cool. I get you. But not a Turbo Man shirt. Not a Turbo Man outfit.
Granted, it was after I was already older. But I remember like the Tickle Me Elmo craze. The Furbies. Yes. Like, what? I was older than that. But I also remember being a kid and wanting like the Masters of the Universe and Ghostbusters and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I know that feeling that little Jake Lloyd pre-Anakin had.
And see, for me, I was going to say that. Like, for me, because I grew up, like I said, in the late 90s, one of the first Christmas gifts I ever remember at 3 years old was what you're pulling up right now, Brett, was a Nintendo 64. And that was one of my first gifts. And again, one of my favorite things back in the day, it still is Batman. And I remember getting the Batmobile, Batman dolls, Batman outfits. Like, that was my thing during Christmas. And you mean to tell me, yeah, I didn't get the Batman Forever limited edition costume, outfit, suits and stuff like that.
We've all had that disappointment on Christmas morning.
But we
open up the box of clothes, right, or whatever, but you still got something.
Right, that's what I'm saying. No matter what, you still got a gift for Christmas. You mean to tell me you ain't got your kid shit? Okay, Howard. All right, Howard. Father of the year. All right.
I think that was, for me, always the fun thing with Jingle All the Way and like kind of why it resonates and why I can always watch it like kind of regardless. You guys kind of hit me up. Hey, can you do this episode? Yeah, because I watched this. It's holiday season, so of course I've just recently watched Jingle All the Way. But it is like you mentioned, Julian, looking at the Nintendo 64 that came out kind of
right around the same time.
Yeah, and it's there's something always like kind of once the Santa Claus myth goes away.
When you're a kid, you long for that, and you look to your parent and you try to explain to them how important this one thing is.
Exactly. And so yeah, like the Nintendo 64 was the one that like I remember like having visions of getting the Nintendo 64 or like getting it, and then also is the games. Like some of the games I remember that holiday season were tough to get, but I was like, well, Arnold went through all this trouble. Like he was a bad dad, but he went through all this trouble to get it for his kid. Like I think I told you where to go and what times to get this, like the Star Wars game that's tough to get this holiday season.
Like this is where you need to go. This is where it's at. Like I'm giving you all the information, and like even Jake Lloyd's character when he's like, I want the Turbo Man with the blah, 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 and the rocket firing this and that. And you're just like, Arnold, how did you not know? And even his wife is like, oh, you got the doll, right? Like, I told you about it 2 months ago.
Yes.
But then it's all like, I always just felt like kind of blindly, I was like, oh, well, my parents are going through all this work to get me the gifts that I really like.
Well,
like,
and we just had Black Friday. So like you see it.
Oh, so, and I mean, and
with the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X.
I cannot, like, I had to muffle my laughs. I was, the day the PS5 got released.
Parents walking in.
Yes.
Like, saying, like, oh, I'm here for a PS5. And you're just like, the same thing as the guys in the toy store.
I was
store.
Just about to say that. So you're sitting there, and like again,
and
I don't work.
We've all worked at Best Buy.
So I was just gonna say I don't work at Best Buy anymore. But like with the Switch, and I'm gonna say this story for you guys. When I was working with the Switch, 2017, I'll never forget it. And Johnny, you probably dealt with this with the Xbox One X and PS5. But like for the Switch, because it was so hard to get, even during my birthday of 2017. But then during the holidays, it was even harder to get that and the Super Nintendo that came out that same year. And it bothered me. And I swear to God, it pissed my soul off. But it still made me laugh to this very day when somebody would come in it wouldn't matter what time of the day it is. It'd be like a Saturday or Sunday.
Some parent
is like, "Oh my god,
I'm here for that." I'm and they're like, "I'm here for this," and you're like, just like.
You just want to be like, oh, that's real cute, Howard. Like, get to stepping, man.
Go, you have better chances going online to the eBay scalpers. Go get you out of here.
And that's like, yeah, I was going to say.
And
like,
they come in so confident, too. They're just like,
you know you got one in the bag.
They're like, I'm here for this.
That's exactly how this dad at a GameStop on the Thursday that the PS5, like, I'm like, cut like six deep. Dad like comes quickly through the door, and I was like looking outside anyway, and I see this dad like kind of swiftly like come in to the parking and then like kind of rush into the store and be like, and like, you know, we're all in line, and the dad's like, hey, do you, PS5s, you got PS5s? And the clerk's just like, are you kidding me? You know what you're searching for? And it just calls right away. I had the acid flashback to Jingle All the Way. I'm like, who is this guy thinking he can just come in store
and be like, hey,
most sought after toy the day of? Like, come on, man, get to stepping.
And that's what's so funny about this film,
and
like
Howard, and then Sinbad's character Myron.
Yes,
like because they're in the same situation.
Yes,
but obviously, like Myron's more like working class.
Yep,
and they portray him a certain way. As like, oh, he's kind of a deadbeat, and he feels a certain way because of what his dad did to him. He didn't get the toy he wanted, so that's why he turned out the way he is.
And to that point, I'm going to make it a little step further, which I guess was after rewatching it for the upteenth time, because I watched this every year since 2017 as a Christmas movie. Sinbad, in a sense, also feels like, as a black nationalist, or what we consider in the black community, a hotep, right? He comes off very as a clownish hotep that's like, everybody's against me, I'm entitled, and the man is against me, yeah. So I gotta get a win for myself because I'm selfish for my kid, right? And it's like, I mean, I get you, I understand you, but this isn't the way to go. And just because your dad didn't give you a toy, you mean to tell me you're now a mailman who's a deadbeat dad, and this is the only way your son is gonna love you? All right, bro, I don't like you. I don't get it. But all right, Sinbad. All right, Myron, I get you. And so it was different looking back at it now with those lenses, because you're like, yeah, he is very cartoonish as a hotep guy, as a literal personification caricature of a black nationalist, but it's like, at the same time, the things that he does in certain conversations, like where in the midst when he first meets Howard,
when he chokes the woman,
yes,
and it says like, this is bullshit, this is because you're putting me down, it's the man, y'all are the problem, it's not me,
it's you, and he starts shaking the woman, and it's just like, all right, I see where we're going.
Eventually, like later on, telling him like, Howard, I tried to be your teammate, but you try to be fancy with your cashmere coat and this and that, and he just, you know, goes off the deep end.
And granted, it makes it entertaining at that time, and I think that's what I feel like was, again, we could talk about the story all day long, but the thing that kept me going with Sinbad is his I call it ad-libs, because like we were talking about, I don't think he really had that much lines in the script. I think he just ran with what he wanted, like with Phil, because if I remember correctly, him and Phil have been doing collaborations during this time. A movie that I haven't watched forever was Coneheads. There we go.
Yep.
They were in Coneheads together and another movie together. I don't remember the other movie, but they always were in this kind of ad-lib kind of thing. And for me personally, Sinbad was at his peak, or was doing really great, when he was coinciding with Arnold. Their banter between each other and their quest to get this damn doll for their sons has been the best highlight of this film. One of the highlights. Not best, but one of the highlights of this film.
I mean, yeah. I would say, like, in that kind of mid-90s era, like, Sinbad was the most important black actor in my world. Like, that guy was...
Really?
It. Okay. Like, he was it. Like, he was... Like, it's not like he was at the same level as Denzel. Like, I'm looking over his IMDb. I'm just like, yeah, these are all bangers that I loved watching as a kid. I loved Sinbad. So, like,
To make him a villain.
Yeah, like, well, it's crazy to say, like, I might have been just as big of a Sinbad fan, like 12-year-old Brett, as an Arnold fan. Like, Sinbad got me into the movie just as much as Arnold did.
I would agree with that. Wow, all right. And that's what was so funny. Like, even their first time meeting each other, when they're at the store and they're fighting, and he literally, like, trips Arnold over, and then Arnold go takes this kid's RC in the middle of the store.
Get the mailman! You got to!
It was entertaining to watch.
They're
that.
Such so good funny. Physical comedians.
Yes.
Those guys. And that's where, like, I think you start to get into those mid-90s where when people start to realize, like, oh, like, Arnold's
it's
not
kind of
just
that,
like,
Buster Keaton type.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's not just this, like, big muscle-bound action guy. Like, he's good at physical comedy. Like, we can exploit this. And this, I think what Jingle All the Way does so well is just, like, really unearthing that Arnold can be a comedian, and he's really good at it. Like, he can do this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, going on from that, you have this stuff with him and Jim Belushi, the okay. Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And their little, like, ring.
Hey, say, man, I heard you're looking for that doll.
And then you have, the little elf standing there just like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they go take him to the Santa's warehouse, right? And he's like, oh, you might not want to open it. And it's not even a symbol. And it's speaking Spanish. And you're like, dude.
And he opens the box and it starts falling apart.
Right.
And like, he's just like, what? What is this? Oh, give me my money back.
He's like, oh,
no refunds.
Refunds. Like, and then they go into this huge brawl where, and again, you I was 2 days old show. When I found out from last week, Big Show and Arnold went at it, and I was like, what?
You guys did the homework there, because
I have to have that heavy.
It was always like a rumor in my head, or maybe like I saw it online that was the Big Show, but it's confirmed.
I was confirmed. I was 2 days years old last week when Johnny told me that was actually Big Show.
The Big Show. All
right. But yeah, he's like, I'm going to deck your hall.
And he punched the little
guy, and he flies across the
oh my god! Just such a great sight gag.
And then, like, moving on from that to, like, they have that big brawl, and then the cops show up. They break it up, and then Arnold just grabs the toy
badge. Yes,
the toy badge, and is like, "This is the most horrible bust I've ever seen." I've been on this case for 3 years. What are you doing? Go out there and arrest somebody.
No! And I'm like, all right. Okay. And it's like, how did anybody not understand it? But then I started thinking about it. Like, maybe because it was the cashmere coat, I guess, whatever you might want to say. But, like, how is he able to get away with having a toy badge with all those cops and must have got himself out of that?
Can I just say, too, as an aside, like, The coat's been mentioned twice now. I thought being an adult was having a coat like that. Like that coat was so important to me as a kid of like,
you gotta have this that is what, and the scarf.
This is what adulting is having a coat that goes to like your ankles and it's just this like glorious, like essentially cape, right?
Yeah, it was a cape. It was like, it's an adult cape.
And I don't think that's an accident.
No,
but like not. That coat was just so important to me, and I never had a coat like that. And if the first time I put one on like that, I'm gonna be like, I'm like Arnold, like I'm an adult now.
I mean, I pea coated up in the winter.
So I was just about to ask.
I don't do the full like Bruce Wayne, Arnold Schwarzenegger like. To the ankles, right. Like flowy.
Yeah.
So I was just gonna ask. Scarf. So both of you guys have that kind of cashmere coat in your closet?
No. No. That's how I know I'm not a grown up yet.
That's Johnny just saying. Yeah, I'm not an adult. I don't have that coat yet.
Still waiting. Okay. Still waiting for it. I have a pea coat, and it comes down.
It comes right here to my It comes right up to upper mid thighs. I want to get the one that's
definitely
full cape like Arnold.
Definitely pea coated, but yes, not like
no. You need the flowy one.
That's a luscious, luscious coat. Like and then
you need to be able to like pop the collar.
Yes.
The scarf.
Great coat.
Yeah. Can we talk about Rita Wilson?
So I was just gonna say one of the things is
Mom of the Year.
Well, and see, we're gonna talk about that really quick because I love Rita Wilson, and I'm gonna say this because I love her, and during this time of her career, right, In 93, she did Sleepless in Seattle. She did Now and Then. And she did The Story of Us in 99, right? She was one of her own, right? And I hate to say it.
She's like, just Tom Hanks' wife.
Right. And it's so bothersome to me that that happened in Jingle All the Way, because it's like, Rita, you were a woman on your own. You were in Sleepless in Seattle with your husband 2 years into your marriage. Was it 2 years? No, 5 years into your marriage, because y'all got married in 88. And so you're sitting there and you're like, wow. You go from
and,
that.
And then in this, her being like a
housewife. Powerful, yeah.
Well, I mean, she's still, yeah, yeah. She's a housewife, but she's also, she's powerful and independent. And like when Phil Hartman tries to put the moves on, she lays the smack down on him.
After many, many advances.
Oh, yeah. He tried.
And just.
Because well, you're not leaving Arnold. For fucking Phil. Well, it's even like even though Phil's sporting some BDE, like he's sporting it, but like, come on.
Well,
he's
not Arnold. Then even when he tells Arnold, like, you can't. When Arnold, so here's the situation where he tries to rob the toy and the reindeer goes crazy and the fire starts and Rita and Phil show up and Phil's like, you can't bench press yourself out of this one.
It's like, you of all people, she's not taking you, Phil. Like, that's not going to happen. Well,
but she doesn't help the situation either when she's like, can you drive us to the parade?
To the parade, Ted.
But absolutely. Then when, yeah, he puts the moves on and she's like, nope, throws the eggnog in his face. And I've got some non-alcoholic eggnog here. Just
pouring it out. And that's why I was like, for me, it's just Rita, and I hate to say it, and I guess it's because it's like, quote unquote, a man-led film. Rita takes the backseat in this film. And
she does.
And that's why I guess that was my only, one of my, not one of my only. This is one of the biggest critiques that I had for the film, because it's like, again, Rita was her own person at this time, and she literally takes a backseat. She only does a few of, Howard. And it's like,
really, Howard?
And it's like, you do that the entire movie, and she has maybe one or two, or maybe even three good dialogue scenes between her and Howard, but that's pretty much it. Like, Rita doesn't really do anything else inside of this film, and it's like, now, I hate to say it, Rita has become Tom Hanks' wife now. It's like, nothing else now. It's like, she did a couple of good movies in the 90s. Now she's Tom Hanks' wife.
This is definitely a film that wouldn't pass the Bechdel test?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I know what test you're talking about, but yes.
Essentially, the women in this movie are just talking about the men in this movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's I'm always something like, I think like my mom always connected a lot with Rita Wilson. Like that was somebody that like my mom loves, and it just, yeah, like she's but it, again though, this is Arnold and Sinbad's movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I was like, those are the
stars. And then you got little Jake Lloyd.
Mate.
Little pre-Anakin Jake Lloyd.
Let's talk about Jake Lloyd really quick.
I just want to say this really quick about it. I want to say, and we talked about this a little bit in the Clouds That Beast podcast. Jake Lloyd, as much as he's been going through a lot in his life recently, and prayers to him and his family right now, I hate to say it, the writing was on the wall with this film. I hate to say it. Like I was telling Johnny, yes, his acting
chops. Got Anakin.
Right. His acting chops aren't terrible in this film, but at the same time, he is literally Anakin in this film, complaining the entire time. Like the first beginning of the movie, he's like a whiny little kid. And he gets to a point where he says certain things, but then when him and Johnny are playing with each other, you hear like, no, Anakin.
I'm Turbo Man.
See, yeah, you start hearing Anakin come out, and you're like, oh, no.
Where was this in episode one?
Well, like, and let me add, like, because, Julian, you were a little, you know, possibly a little bit too young, but, like, when you heard, Johnny, when you heard that he was cast as Anakin Skywalker in Star Wars, were you, like, I was excited. Like I remember I was being like,
"Oh, the kid from Jingle All the Way." Yeah,
I love that movie. Yeah. Of course, this kid's going to be great.
See, so to your point, like I remember watching the VHS of Jingle All the Way, right? Uh-huh. And like I said, I wasn't old enough to know about the films and be as interested in films as I was, but I do remember feeling some type of, not some type of way, but being like, you know, when you're like at that age where you're like, I remember you from something. That's how I started getting Jake, because my dad took us to go see episode one, Phantom Menace. And I'm like, I know this kid from somewhere. And I thought, like, you know, me with my imagination, I thought I saw this kid as a friend somewhere. But no, he was from Jingle All the Way. And when you start watching the movies, you're like, okay, that's when I started connecting people and started learning how to connect movies together. Uh-huh. So, yeah, you're right. I was a little young, but he was like one of my first early, like, I know that guy, like, kind of situations.
It's certainly one of those, like, oh, there's just a couple actors that are doing all the roles in Hollywood, right?
Right. Him, Arnold, and Will Smith were my three that I was like, wow, they're doing everything.
Can we all just think about the fact that, like, George Lucas definitely watched Jingle All the Way multiple times?
Oh, yes. Yes, he definitely
did. He definitely did.
But then he didn't use any of that.
He's like, you know what I want to do to this emotive kid? Give him no emotion.
No emotion. None.
I'm gonna take him from being angry at a 6'4" giant man yelling at him about a doll, and I'm gonna turn him into, are you an angel?
Oh, let's try doing this. Whoa! Spinning around. So, to your point, like, Jake Lloyd did, I think, unfortunately, the most that he could do in this role as a kid. And I hate to say it, but, you know, he is probably the closest thing you'll get from an Arnold Rita Wilson's chop. Like, that would be the closest thing you would get from him. He probably just needed a little bit more mannerisms of Arnold, but yeah, he's a spitting.
Well, on top of the fact that Arnold's accent is just in and out that, like, I think, you know, I don't think it, like, tricks where, like, the beginning of the movie that he's, like, trying, and then by the end it's not. It's just, like, it's random, yeah, no, and it's clearly no, Austrian.
Yes.
No, he's 100% Austrian. And then, so that's why it's also so weird when he shows up at the parade and they suit him up as the Turbo Man, and nobody even, like, questions it. Like,
hold on.
Hey, what's with the deal with this Austrian guy?
So, hold on. So, yes, let's go there. All right, you ready? Let's put a pin and let's expand on it. So, let's talk about how he even got to Turbo Man. He's at the parade. He stumbles. He stumbles because he's run away from the cop that he's been seeing all
that
damn
blown
movie.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah, that he blown up. We're gonna get there later. Also, like, the same cop that blown up, same cop that he got a ticket from in the beginning of the movie, this Mrs. Kid's karate class, and the one he broke his bike for, he is running from him, gets into the parade and is like, oh, you're here, oh my god, finally. And they're like just throwing Turbo Man on him, and it's like, oh, now you got a jetpack, you got a flying saucer, that's
all. And they're like, yeah, at 70 RPMs, you're going to want to do this. And he's just like,
it's like,
the last guy ended up in the hospital, but
it'll be fine. It's like, dude, what are you doing? And that little voice, the thing is, again, it doesn't make sense to me. The voice scrambler that they use for Turbo Man.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me, you Jake Lloyd, and Rita Wilson, none of y'all can tell, hey, that voice cracklers sounds a little Austrian to me. Is that Arnold? Like, you mean to tell me that doesn't work? All right. Okay, guys. That's fine. And, oh, all of a sudden, the Turbo Man outfit fits Arnold perfectly. Not no dents, no wraps, no nothing.
Yeah, so we're saying that previous guy that was wearing the uniform was the same size as Arnold?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Not very likely.
But it was still entertaining. It was still entertaining to watch him pretend to be Turbo Man for like 15, 20 minutes of the movie.
Oh, fly around into flags and all kinds of flying around the city.
And then get stuck on the building and then flies all the way down and flies to still be able to maneuver and fall around to go save his son. Like, again, absolutely amazing. But how, like, again, the unbelief that you have to turn your brain down to watch this movie still is fun. Like, I still have a great time with it, but it's like, okay, all right, guys, makes sense. But let me ask this. What did you guys think of that, like, climactic scene where Sinbad becomes his villain and he becomes Turbo Man? Like, what did you guys feel about that at all?
I mean, watching that as a kid, it's catnip. Like,
yeah, because you're like, oh. That could be my dad.
Okay. Exactly. I mean, I think the whole... what always makes this movie great is just as a kid, you know, the imagination's rolling and you're putting your life into it.
You're like, oh yeah, my parents go through the same thing every holiday trying to get me whatever it is I want.
And you're sitting there like, my dad will be Turbo Man because he's trying to get me a Turbo Man doll. Or how I felt about it, this was a coincide with Power Rangers. So I'm like, my dad is a Power Ranger and he's going to get me one of the black Power Ranger toys. It's like, no, that's not how that works, Julian. But yes, let your mind run. And so it was pretty cool watching that as an aspect.
I always thought too, like this definitely hit me like more in my late teens on the rewatches and then into my early 20s of like, what is this parade?
Was this supposed to be a Macy's Christmas Day parade? Was this
like,
supposed to be
like in the north? What are we doing here?
Because it's like, it's Minnesota.
Right. Yeah, it's in Minneapolis. Yes, exactly.
And it's like December. Christmas Eve?
In December? Like, nobody's outside. I'm pretty sure we're certainly not doing parades.
Oh, you're snowed in already. Stores are closed. What are you talking about? But everybody's out and about.
I've been in Minneapolis in September and been snowed in.
So that was always something where, yeah, that third act, I'm just like, what are we like celebrating? Like, why are we forcing people out to this parade this late in the season? Like, this is not comfortable for anybody here. Yeah.
But it's even though, like I said, you got to do a string of a lot of disbelief in this film, it's still a lot fun to have with this film, right? Oh. Like I said, the last 20, 30 minutes, you got Turbo Man. One of my favorite scenes is when, you know, they're in a coffee shop, I think, and the coffee diner, and Myron and Howard are having their break heart to heart, where Myron tells him that the reason why he's a mailman is because his dad didn't give him a toy. And so basically, Howard pitches.
Yeah. And he says, like, am I a failure as a father because I didn't get the toy? He said, no, I'm a failure because I yelled at my son for no reason.
It's like,
heartstrings there.
Yeah. And then, you know, he goes, calls Jamie and tries to tell him he's sorry. And lo and behold, they go running to the the radio station to go tell him all
blow
the
up
reindeer.
A policeman.
And Sinbad is like, I got a bomb package. And it's like, okay, bro. All right. And then, lo and behold, that same cop that Howard's been dealing with. Been in the bomb
squad. I've been on the bomb squad for 10 years.
And in the mid-90s, too, like, the bomb reference was always a little bit more, like, loaded. Because, I mean, like, there was the
Oklahoma City,
the Olympics, the original, in Atlanta, like,
right, the original World Trade Center bomb attack that was an,
yeah,
the car bomb,
like,
yes.
So that was always like a little bit more. I was just like, oh, like,
and then for them to turn it
bad, like,
and
this
for
is, like,
them to turn it into
me.
Like a Wile E. Coyote,
yeah,
type thing where the cop's just standing there with like black powder all over.
It
himself.
Always was one of those scenes that, like, once I was like late teens and watching, and I was like, this is even bad now in the early aughts. I was like, this is not good. Like,
and to your point with the Wile E. Coyote boom, you mean to tell me Howard is running out and he feels, and you see the camera go, the shake, and they're still in the radio station, and Arnold goes, and Sinbad, still in the exact same building, maybe down the hall, maybe? He's in the same floor. Down the hall is like, man, I didn't know there's a bomb. This is a sick people, sick world out here.
Yeah, he's like, this is a sick world with sick people.
And then the cop, literally, really, instead of it being bombed, like literally blown up or anything, all he has is black powder all on him, hair is out a little bit, with smoke coming out of the box, and all the other cops completely fine. They're going,
10 years on the
bomb
squad,
huh? Exactly. And it's like, what? Where the cop?
That cop is just, he's so good. Like, he's like, it's like, you can't steal scenes from Sinbad and Arnold.
He's like a Clint Eastwood cowboy type cop.
I'm going to say, Robert Conrad, you can tell, like, he is able to be in the back seat, because his name is Officer Alexander Hamel. And, yeah, Robert Conrad knows how to take the back seat, and is like, I know what I am, and I'm okay with what's going on. And it's like, all right, I love it. But it's just, still, again, a lot of disbelief you got to put in this film, especially like one
and
of those.
And then even when the Turbo Man reveal happens, and he's like, "Thank you, Turbo Man."
It's like, it's just, he's like, you know, just a step up of a day player.
Yes.
But he's coming in and just killing it. Giving you some haymakers. It's where, like, yes. You know that the director or the producers are just like, oh, thank God we cast this guy.
Yeah. Even in the beginning where he's like, go ahead and recite the alphabet. And then he starts doing it. He's like, backwards.
Backwards. And that was an early time, too, where I was like, wait, doing the alphabet backwards? I can't do that, like, right now. Like, cops are going to get me. I'm done. No drinking for me in the future. I got to be on my game. And I mentioned the filmmakers. Can I just quickly make an aside? So...
You have Chris Columbus involved.
Yes. Yeah, he's the producer, yeah.
Crazy. Like, so the second movie this guy, Chris Columbus produces, but, like, looking back at him, like, oh, it makes sense. This guy knew 90s kids. He knew how to tap into 90s kids and, like, make a cottage industry.
Make you be like, oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's insane how much Chris Columbus is, like, my 90s-ness. And then, you know, yeah, and then, of course, then he took Harry Potter on to where it was. The other guy I want to just quickly mention is this, the director. I don't know if you guys mentioned this on the Lost to the Servers podcast, but Brian Levant, name means nothing, but he is...
The movies he's directed, though.
So
yeah, we haven't talked about this.
1991... Problem Child 2. I don't know if you guys are Problem Child kids, but like
I always wanted
to be a Problem Child.
So I was going to say really quick.
Just never had the balls for it.
So really quick, I was just going to say this is so weird. I'm going to say this. Again, I was born in 94, but the movies that I grew up on in like the late 90s, early 2000s were those early 90s movies. Dennis the Menace, Problem Child, Problem Child 2. Movies like that is where my childhood adolescence come from. And I'm like,
how? I want to be that.
Right. I want to be this kid.
Why can't I be that?
How do I get away with that stuff? Yeah, so exactly. Problem Child 2 in 91. A year later, the man hits us with Beethoven.
Ooh.
One of our great dog movies. Then the Flintstones, which I'm okay with it.
It is what it is.
Looking back at it now, it was
And then 2 years later, Jingle All the Way. So clearly, this Bryant Levant in the mid-90s was just like, oh, you got a decent child property? Let's get my boy Bryant on it. He'll fucking knock this thing out of the park.
Oh, wow. I did not know this. So really quick, yes, he is really great in 90s. But also, he did some stuff early in the 2000s. He did Flintstones, Viva Las Vegas, which was a movie that I bought that we had on VHS and watched all the time. Snow Dogs and Are We There Yet? Now, again, I don't care for the family-friendly Ice Cube, but that was one of the first movies where I was like, wow.
He helped turn Ice Cube into a family-friendly
guy. Yes, he definitely did. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know... He was quintessential director. For my night. Right. I'm just now realizing this. He was quintessential in all of my kids' movies. He was one of the few, like Christopher Columbus, who kind of helped me be like, wow, these are some cool stories that I enjoyed. So, yeah, wow.
Interesting filmmaker, yeah. I mean, certainly the guy, like, I'm sure this when Bryant Levant was, like, 20, he's like, I want to make cool, interesting films. But the man carved out a nice cottage industry, still working into the, you know... you know, yeah, 2017, still making movies. So interesting guy to come in there. And then, but you know, I think certainly you look at this and see kind of the warmth and the kind of child awe-ness mm-hmm. of it. That's Chris Columbus is all over that.
Yeah, and it's one of those things with a film like this, very similar to like Home Alone, where you can relate. Like mm-hmm. you're just like, oh, that's me.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was going to say. One of the crazier things is like, as you were saying, a lot of these kids movies that I grew up on that I just mentioned, I always wanted to be that kid, right? Like those were aspirations that I wanted. Like I wanted to be Dennis the Menace. I wanted to be Kevin McAllister in Home Alone. I wanted to be that. But the movie that I knew for sure, and I guess that's why it resonated with me so much was, you know, Jake Lloyd or Jamie in this film, because we all have been that kid where we wanted that gift. And like I said, there's going to be so many kids. I'm sorry to say this on this podcast. That's going to be so hurt.
Are you ruining Christmas?
I'm not trying to ruin Christmas. You talk to Sony and Microsoft on that one. That's not my fault. That's their fault, not mine.
But just give them a printout.
Say a receipt like, that says, it's coming.
Coming spring.
Right. You get a receipt saying, it's coming soon. But to my point, like, we all fit that kid where we're like, Dad, Mom, I need this. Like, this, I got to
be. If I don't have this,
kids are going to be
a loser. Right. Like, I'm going to be the only
my
kid.
Social life is non-existent if I don't get this, right? And so I get it because we all have been that kid before. Like I said, in the 90s, it was always the Nintendo 64. If I did not get a certain game when I was in school, I was laughed at. You know what I'm saying? And it's that kind of thing that you sit there and I still, unfortunately, still resonate with. Even though this movie is made for kids, it's like, wow, I've always been that kid that I needed this. Granted, the movie's uneven. The movie is like all over the place, but I still entertain and still resonate with it because we all know, or we like not knocking on the door right now. Sorry, just I'm superstition. I ain't trying to have kids anytime soon, but if that comes to happen, right.
It's. I mean, it's. I think the same way. I'm like, I will never be Howard.
Right. Like, I will never be him during Christmas Eve trying to find gifts. Nah, that can't be me, bro. Like, I've been in this business too long to be that guy. So yeah.
Well, no, and I mean I mentioned at the start of the review, but it's that fact that this 24-year-old movie that is super dated. It is it's dated very movie.
Oh, yeah, like Toy Stores. What?
This movie, like, again, that a week ago was on TBS. Like, it's always on. Like, the it's network just syndicated. Knows that
yeah.
they can put this on, people will watch it. It's a fun holiday movie. Like, that's insane. Like, I don't think that in 1996 they were like, cool, this movie's going to be on 25 years later.
Yeah. No, there was no way that when the producers and the studio were doing script reads that they were like, oh, yeah, this is going to be Home Alone. This is going to be Christmas Story. But it is.
It is, man. It works.
And that's what I was going to say. It's so weird that, again, I talked about this. I think I put it in. I had to go back and listen to the podcast way back when we did our Christmas holiday films, Johnny. I think I had this at the bottom of the list or as an honorable mention because, again, I've watched, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, Christmas Story, Home Alone, Polar Express. Those were all the quintessential Christmas movies. But the unsung hero in my generation for me as a 90s kid was Jingle All the Way. And I still, not, as you can see, for the last 3 years, it's been in my rotation of Christmas movies every year. And it got so bad to the point where I almost bought the DVD. There's no Blu-ray of it. I'm upset that there's no Blu-ray of it. But there's a DVD version of this movie. And I'm just like...
What? There's no 4K transfer of this yet?
No.
No. I wish, but no.
No HDR?
But yeah, I love it. I enjoy it. I know what it is. I know what I'm getting myself into. So yeah, absolutely. If anybody wants to know if this movie is good, hell no. I'm going to be honest. No, it's not. But there's very great, fun moments in Jingle All the Way that definitely keeps
and you. And it resonates.
Yes.
With anybody. Anybody who's ever
wanted
who
something.
Who celebrates... you know, Christmas or Hanukkah, and you've ever wanted, or even your birthday, if you've had something.
Yeah, exactly. If you've had a birthday and there's a, like, it's a gift movie.
Yes.
If there's ever been where you want to get the perfect gift or give the perfect gift, this is a movie that just gets into that core frustration of, like, trying to do the shopping or the receiving. Like,
yes.
Because I think that's what Jake Lloyd does well as the kid actor here is
he knows everything about this one thing and he wants it more than anything.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, if I'm the only kid, then I'm going to be a loser.
And, you know, we all have been, I think all of us can agree that we have all been that one kid where we're like, I literally know the
exactly.
smallest details of this one
doll. And I know where
doll.
You can get it. I know when you can get it. And
if you don't follow my instructions, I will be a loser and I will blame you, right?
So
that's how we felt. So
it's clear to say that Brian Levant is a better child director than George Lucas.
Yeah.
Yes. 100,000%. Yes.
Because he got a great performance that then 3 years later, this kid suddenly couldn't act anymore. Did the kid stop learning how to act, or is there just a better director at hand?
Yeah, I mean,
it's like, you have all the budget and the technology,
and you got free creative control, and you still couldn't get a child actor.
But this guy, know, he probably had Jake Lloyd on set for like
three days.
Week,
yeah,
exactly,
and got a better performance out of him.
But anyway, I would say, just for nostalgia purposes, if y'all want to give it stars, what would you give it?
Like, we're saying like holiday sentimental stars? Like, this is a 4-star holiday movie
for me. Okay. All right. I was going to say that.
I can get behind that. I would say, as a film, it's probably closer to like a 2.
It's going to be 2.5.
But yeah, as a holiday movie, yeah, 4
stars. Absolutely, 4 stars. I love it. I was going to say that because for me, as a film, yeah, 2 stars. But when it comes out during the holidays, you damn right it's coming out and being popped out. You damn right it will. 4 stars. Watching it every year. No worries. Absolutely. So, yeah, perfect. Yeah, we'll go from there. Is there any wrapping arguments?
I think that's it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Perfect.
Can I ask, is this the best Arnold Schwarzenegger comedy?
Ooh.
That might be another discussion.
Can we go to that? Because I could argue.
I could argue Kindergarten Cop.
I mean, yeah. Kindergarten Cop's there.
See, we could argue this. This is an arm. All right. I'm just throwing this out there. This is an Armchair Fisk episode, and I will fight for this. I fight for this argument because there's a couple of movies where I'm like, yes, give me a movie. You give me what movie you pick. I know what movie I got. I can't give you it yet, but yes, I will fight for this. I will literally fight for this. Yes.
All right. Well, with that said, that's the end of episode 57 of Matinee Talk. Where can the kids find y'all?
So for me, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. As I mentioned before, and I'll just say it again to reiterate for everybody who didn't listen to last episode, I will be having my reviews on Letterboxd. Those will be coming up soon. Of next month, next year, 2021, you'll see my reviews. Won't put it up just now, but for now, you'll just see me on Instagram and Twitter. Brett?
You can find me hopefully every goddamn day at Letterboxd. I'm 4 films away, I think, from hitting 100 for the year. This has been a tough year to hit 100. Usually I would have hit 100 back in April, March.
I mean, last year, like by May, I was at 100.
Yeah. So, weird year. And then otherwise, you can find me with Johnny on the If the Armchair Fits.
Cool. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder and on Letterboxd at Johnny Boy Wonder. With that being said, have a good morning, evening, afternoon, whatever you are, however you're listening, and we will catch you next time.
See you guys then.
Later.